I'd like to present a lesson today entitled, For Such a Time as This. You might recognize that from Esther chapter 4, verse 14, which says, For if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time, then shall there an enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place, but thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed, and who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this. For such a time as this. And we're going to go through and study this story in Esther, which I'm sure many of you are very familiar with. But as we do, we want to think about our lives as well. For such a time as this. About, is it just coincidence that we live in the time that we do and have the opportunities that we do? Or are we have tremendous opportunities around us and not taking advantage of in our lives? We're going to kind of summarize just a little bit this morning to reduce the amount of reading, but I encourage you to go back and read the whole book of Esther when you have time. It's a very interesting book and a lot of good lessons to be learned there. But in chapter 2 of Esther, we see that Esther, who was a Jew, was chosen as queen to the king. I'm going to kind of pronounce his name once, and then we'll just call him the king. Ahasuerus, I believe is what it's pronounced, in chapter 2. And then in chapter 2, verses 19 through 23, we see that Mordecai, who was Esther's cousin, learns of a plot against the king. And then we see in these passages here that Mordecai, he lets Esther know about the plot, and she tells the king, and then they foil the plot, and then it keeps the king from being assassinated. And this was written in the Chronicles, or what we might call journals today. And then there was a man named Haman in Esther chapter 3. It rose to power under the king, and he ordered everyone to bow to him, just kind of an ego thing on his part. But Mordecai would not bow to Haman, and it really bothered Haman a lot that he would not. So Haman got the king to order that all Jews be put to death. And he mainly did this because of Mordecai. So then we see in Esther chapter 4, beginning with verse 7, which we are going to read, that Mordecai asked Esther for help because he realizes at this time that all the Jews are fixing to be put to death because of Haman, and that the whole people there are fixing to be wiped out. In Esther chapter 4, begin with verse 7, and Mordecai told him of all that had happened unto him, and the sum of the money that Haman had promised to pay the king's treasuries for the Jews to destroy them. And he gave him the copy of the writing of the decree that was given at Shushan to destroy them, and to show it unto Esther, and declare it unto her, and to charge her that she should go into the king to make supplication unto him, and to make request before him for her people. And Hatach came and told Esther the words of Mordecai. Again, Esther spoke unto Hatach, and gave him commandment unto Mordecai. In verse 11, all the king's servants and all the people of the king's provinces do know that whosoever, whether man or woman, shall come into the king's court, into the inner court, who is not called, there is one law of his to put him to death, except such whom the king shall not hold. The king shall hold out the golden sepulcher that he may live. But I have not been called to come in unto the king these 30 days. So let's pause just a moment there and get the picture. Mordecai has asked his cousin Esther to go before the king to try to keep the slaughter of all the Jews there from happening. And then Esther sends a message back to Mordecai and tells him, "So you know, I'm the king, I'm the queen, I'm his wife, but he hasn't even called for me in the last 30 days. And they had a law there that if you go in like to approach the king into this inner court and he didn't call for you, if he doesn't hold up that golden sepulcher, then you're put to death immediately." So that's what Esther's up against. She said, you know, he hasn't called for me and don't know that he will. And even me being the queen, being his wife, if I go and approach him and, you know, he's not in a good mood and he doesn't accept me in, then I'll be put to death. Verse 12, and they told to Mordecai Esther's words. And Mordecai commanded to answer Esther, says, "Think not with thyself that thou shalt escape in the king's house more than all the Jews. For if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time, then shall there an enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place, but thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed, and who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this." So we see where the lesson comes from here. And Mordecai sends back the message to Esther. He says, "You know, yes, I know, you may lose your life, but you know what? Your father's house and all the Jews and all your family are going to lose their life if you don't take this chance." And the message that Mordecai had for Esther was, "Is who knows whether you were put in this position for such a time as this. Maybe God put you in this position. And it's not going to stop God's will from being done, because he said it. He said the deliverance will rise to the Jews from another place." In other words, God's will is still going to be done, but he said, "But it won't come through your family. All your family will be killed." And he said, "Maybe even you'll be even be killed too." So he expresses this message for such a time as this. Maybe you were put. Maybe this is the reason you were born into this world, for just this one moment, for you to be able to do this great thing and deliver your people. So Esther went on in verses 15 and 16. It basically said, "I'll try. I'll do what I can. And if I perish, I perish." In verse 16, she said, I'll go and I'll try and I'll do what I can. And if I die, I'll just die. But I'm going to do what's right. I'm going to try to warn them. So Esther appeals to the king for help in chapter 5 and verses 1 through 8. And then she asked Haman there to join them for a banquet the next day. And Haman expresses his hate for Mordecai, and he has a gallows built 75 feet tall, 50 cubits, as the scripture tells us. But he has a tremendous amount of hate for Mordecai because he won't bow down to him. So the night before their meeting, the banquet was to occur, the king could not sleep that night. So he ordered some of the chronicles, or journals as we called them, to be brought before him, and he just opened them up and started reading. And lo and behold, guess what he read? He read about the time that Mordecai saved his life. And it was written in the journals there that he had uncovered this plot to kill the king, and the people were arrested, and the king's life was spared. And he thought to himself, "Well, what was ever done to Mordecai?" And so when they came in the banquet the next day, the king says to Haman, he said, "If I wanted to honor a person, what would I do?" Well, Haman, being all full of himself as he was, he thought he was talking about him. And he said, "Well, you know, I'd just do all these things about having ride the finest, wear the finest clothes and ride through on the finest horses. And we'd basically just have a parade and all these wonderful things would be done." And you go back and read the scriptures there and see all these things. But he wasn't talking about that. For Haman, he was talking about Mordecai. So we see then that the king honors Mordecai in Esther chapter 6 and verses 1 through 14. But then, in Esther chapter 7, the first 10 verses there, Esther reveals unto the king the plot that Haman has to kill the Jews, and tells her that she is a Jew also, and that he would basically have her killed as well. So Haman, the king has Haman hanged on the gallows that Haman had built to hang Mordecai. Now think about that, how that turned around on him. He built the same gallows that he had built to hang somebody that he hated so much, he wound up being hung on those same gallows. Then the king acts to protect the Jews in Esther chapter 8 and verses 1 through 17. Then we come back to our verse we started with in Esther chapter 4 and verse 14. "Who knoweth whether thou art come into the kingdom for such a time as this?" And certainly Esther had a special time in her life. She had a great opportunity to do something very special with her life. But she had to risk her life to do it. But she went ahead and she took that chance and she did it. And she saved not only herself, but she saved her people, her family. And did a very great thing. But again, we need to ask ourselves about, what about our time? You know, he talked about during the graduation, several of the speakers did, about it being their time. But it's our time as Christians. What are we doing with our opportunities? We are commanded to spread the gospel in the New Testament. Let's read a couple of very familiar passages in Matthew chapter 28, verses 19 and 20. Matthew chapter 28, beginning with verse 19. Jesus said, "Go ye therefore and teach all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Ghost, teaching them to observe all things whatsoever I have commanded you. And lo, I am with you always, even unto the end of the world." So Jesus was giving this great commission to his disciples. And I believe he gives that to us today. That is our purpose upon this earth, is to spread the gospel. And he gives the same words over in Mark chapter 16, verses 15 and 16. "And he said unto them," Jesus speaking, "Go ye into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved, but he that believeth not shall be damned or condemned." So we think about preaching the gospel to all the world. You know, sometimes we think about, well, maybe I can't go all over the world. But you know, the world starts right outside our doorstep. Maybe inside our doorstep, at our house, our own family, our neighbors, our friends, our co-workers, our fellow students, people that we know. Just to spread the gospel to them. I'd like to share a story with you, if I remember it correctly. Brother Harry Cobb was telling about, there was a lady named Miss Smith that led his mother to be a member of the church when Harry was about 15 years old, if I remember the story correctly. Now think about that for a moment, about this Miss Smith in her life. She probably never imagined the things that somebody like Harry Cobb might do. Going to Africa, doing revivals, doing things within this country, and the Philippines, and Mexico, and around the world. It could never have been imagined to her what might become of that. But what about us today? How do we know that just one person that we might have an influence in our life might make a huge difference for the kingdom in this life? And that's not to put Harry up on a pedestal, but he's a very humble servant of the Lord. And he's done a lot of good, and him and his brother as well. But you know, if that one lady had not taken on for her time, to share the gospel, let's think about how different things might have turned out, say for Harry's life and for all of us, maybe that's been influenced by his life. Next, I'd like to share something with you. And one of these letters is up on the board now, email that we get reports from Africa all the time. And, you know, the congregation here supports the work there. But, we're very thankful that Whitney obeyed the gospel and was baptized Thursday night. But, you know, sometimes it's far few between sometimes. It was interesting, just right before church, I'd asked Brother Basil who was the last person that was baptized before that. And we couldn't think of who it was. Basil got it written down at home, I think. But you know, that's kind of bad in a way, isn't it? That we can't remember the last person that was baptized in our congregation. My memory's not as good as it used to be. But you know, we go sometimes and we have the gospel meetings, and sometimes we go all summer long. Nobody obeys the gospel. Sometimes a week at a time, nobody comes forward for prayer. You know, I hope we're all living that good of lives. But you know, I wonder sometimes. Let me give you some examples about You know, a lot of people asked about Harry doing so much work overseas in Africa and the Philippines and Mexico. And this, like I said, some of this is on the board. You can take it and read it yourself. Or if you're interested in getting these emails, I can certainly provide that with you so they can send them to you yourself. But I won't pronounce all these congregations, so I won't butcher them up. But I'm just going to give you a few dates. Over about the last 6 months here about gatherings that they sent reports on. And I think it'll maybe help you to see why Brother Harry and Brother Danny Abercrombie and different ones that go over there and work with these people. January 29th, 307 gathered, 10 baptized, 16 confessed. December 15th, 1,009 gathered, 67 baptized, 49 confessed. December 27th, 93 gathered, 27 baptized, 11 confessed. January 18th, 112 gathered, 17 baptized. January 15th, 459 gathered, 37 baptized, 53 confessed. March 24th, 168 gathered, 28 baptized, 11 confessed. March 25th, 200 gathered, 25 confessed. March 11th, 127 gathered, 18 baptized, 22 confessed. March 25th, 302 gathered, 15 baptized, and 25 confessed. And then this was a summary of, they had meetings from 13 different congregations came together over a period of 3 days from March 22nd through the 25th. Total gathered was 420. 86 baptisms, and 13, I meant 5 were restored. April the 8th, 89 gathered, 17 baptized, 24 confessed. April 15th, 122 gathered, 31 baptized, 13 confessed. May 26th, 461 gathered, 50 baptized, 39 confessed. May 27th, 504 gathered, 21 confessed. April 29th, 68 gathered, 11 confessed, 15 baptized. May the 6th, 121 gathered, 22 confessed. May 3rd, 184 gathered, 7 baptized, 20 confessed. May 27th, 305 gathered, 41 baptized, and 12 rebaptized. And that's just a small sampling. I know that was a lot of reading there, but just think about there, about the work that's being done there and the effect that it's having on the people there. And we're a part of that, and that we support that. And we need to do that even more so. But you know, what about for such a time as this, for us to live in a prosperous country that we are, to be able to support that work? You know, I read a while back that only 17% of the people in this country attend church on a regular basis. Well, not a regular basis. On any given Sunday, only 17% of the people go to church. You know, people talk about the United States of America being a godly nation. But are we a godly nation when only 17% of people go to church on a given Sunday morning? And how many of those people just went because somebody else made them go, or they'd just rather go than hear somebody else fuss about it? Probably a lot of them. So really, very few people actually went because they wanted to go. But what about what such a time as this? What about you and your influence of the people that you have around you? Your children, your parents, your co-workers, your fellow students, your neighbors, your family, your husband, your wife. What about you for such a time as this to make have an influence upon them? In 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 1, it says, likewise, ye wives, be in subjection to your own husbands, that if any obey not the word, that they may, without the word, be won by the conversation or manner of life of the wives, while they behold your chaste conversation coupled with fear. I mean, that's talking about a person living a life before their spouse that they might obey the gospel. And you know, we've seen that happen many times in the Church of Christ, and a lot for women, that they have stayed strong in the faith, and they've affected their either their spouse or their future spouse or whatever. And we look around and see, you know, I'm one of them. You know, I didn't grow up in the Church of Christ, but I was influenced. But you know, by my wife, and many of you were too. But you know, it's people that hold fast to the faith. And like I said, how do you know you weren't put where you're at for such a time as this, to hold strong to the faith? I read the other day, a lady that grew up next door to us when I was growing up, moved when I was 4 or 5 years old, and just barely remember, but the lady passed away, and I saw her obituary in the paper, and Mother mentioned it to me, and I read there, she was a member of the Church of Christ. But I never knew that. I don't know for sure if she, you know, became a member of the Church of Christ later, if they were, but I thought, those people were our neighbors for several years. You know, and you just think about people, you know, they were the people that lived on the same street out close to where I live or grew up at, that a family, that were members of the church. But you know, I didn't ever know it, that they were members of the church. Like I said, they were close in age to me. But you know, there was a time when, like I said, I could have come in contact with that, but I didn't. It was later on, fortunately. But you know, again, what about our time? Our time may be now. What are we doing right now with our time and the opportunities that we have? I used this example back several years ago, and I kind of pulled it out, but if we just led two people to Christ in the next 2 years, and just stop, each and every one of us, but just for one person doing that, if they got the two people that they got in the church, got two more people in the church in the next 2 years, in 20 years there'd be 1,000 members in the church, just from one of us. That's not too much really to ask, is it? That we get two people in the church in the next 2 years. But you know what happens? If I only get one, that cuts our number from 1,000 down to 500. Because I halved it up front. And if I don't get either one of them in 2 years, then that 1,000 goes to zero. Of course, you see how it breaks a chain as we get up bigger. So the church could grow tremendously, that we could have to, you know, the walls would be busting down. But then again, it works the same way going the opposite direction when we just get smaller and smaller and smaller. It goes in both ways. But we are so blessed to live in the United States of America. Blessed beyond measure with the necessities of life, that we don't have much want for anything, for our transportation and communication, for the way of our living here, and the freedoms that we enjoy. You know, the things that we can say and do, you know, that we're not fearful of somebody sitting on the back row back there from the government that's writing down what you say. And, you know, there's countries where you can be called into account for the things that you say. But we're so blessed by God for the salvation that we have through Jesus Christ, for the Bible, and for the church that Christ purchased with His blood, and to have that church so readily available in our area. You know, for the unity, the fellowship, and for the gospel meetings that we have. You know, I know we've mentioned this before sometime, but you know, there's people all over the United States that are members of the Church of Christ that are envious of us because we have these congregations all close together and we have all these gospel meetings during the summer. When you go to these church camps, you go to different places and people, and you tell them you're from Randolph County, and they go, that's the place that has all those churches that close together. That must be wonderful. You know what they'll tell you sometime? You know where the nearest Church of Christ is from us? It's 200 miles. It's 60 or 80 miles. Or it's 500 miles. Or it's something. You know, just like speakers. You know, when somebody says, you know, I'm going to be out of town, we need another speaker, we just call somebody from another congregation, or maybe within our own congregation, to fill in. Those people can't do that. And when they have their gospel meeting, it's over for them for a year. They don't have another one for a year. To think about, some of those people would love to live in Randolph County and experience what we have to offer. But do we take advantage of that? Do we take advantage of hearing all these different speakers throughout the summer and sometime in the spring and the fall when he's got weekend meetings? Well, what are you doing with your such a time as this? Are we making the best of it? Or are we just going to leave it for somebody else to do? That's what Esther could have done. She could have just said, well, let somebody else do it. But you know what? There was nobody else to do it. It was either Esther was going to do it or her people was going to perish. And you know, we need to think about what we're going to do, the example we're going to leave in our lives for our children, for our grandchildren, for our friends or neighbors. It may depend on whether the church stays, you know, active in our area or not. And why are so many people in, and I just gave these few in Africa, but it's the same way in different other places. Those people, are they just that bad over there? They're that wicked that they need to be baptized and need the prayers of the church? No. They're just regular people like we are. They probably have less temptations than we do because they don't have TV and internet and radio and a lot of things that tempts us. They're just people who are hungry for the world, for the word, and they realize that they want the salvation of their souls. And they're humble. And sometimes I think we're just so blessed here that, you know, we just forget about how blessed we are. And we don't appreciate what we have. We're going to sing an invitation song at this time. If there's any that's never rendered obedience to the gospel, and those that have, and can straight away can let your wishes be known.